Welcome to the second edition of United Way of Central Ohio's new podcast, 360. My name is Kermit Whitfield, and I'm the Director of Communications here. And I am sitting down today with Dave Saccone, who is the Senior Assistant Vice President of Community Impact and was one of the chief architects of our new approach to reducing poverty. You know, United Way has gone through a tremendous transformation over the past 2 to 3 years in the way we approach our work. And one of the key things that happened was in November of 2013, our Board of Trustees made a very courageous decision to focus all of our attention and all of our work on reducing poverty. And Dave has been here since the get-go of that process and really helped to lead a lot of it. So I'm wondering, Dave, if you can tell us, talk a little bit about that early time, you know, when the board made that decision to go toward reducing poverty, and then the sort of things that that set into motion for you and your team.
Sure. Well, good morning, Kermit. So thinking back to really late 2013 and early 2014, it was a pretty significant shift. It was the beginning of a transformation from looking at four interrelated but somewhat distinct challenges our community was dealing with: education, income, health, and home, to a singular focus on all of the integrated issues that families and communities and neighborhoods deal with relative to poverty. So that was a significant shift in thinking for our team, and a pretty tall order that that our board charged the organization with. And so really the better part of 2014 was kind of going into learning mode, I think, you know, and working with some of the partners that could help us understand the research and the literature. And I guess I would cite, you know, our friends at the Kerwin Institute at The Ohio State University, who were really partners from the very beginning with us, and they helped us really synthesize and understand a whole lot of material out there as kind of the first step in our journey toward, you know, kind of transforming as an organization. And so, you know, a lot of 2014 was taking stock of what we'd done in the past and understanding how really a good part of that still applied, very much applied to our new direction of poverty reduction. You know, but toward the mid part of 2014 is really kind of when we started to buckle down, and Kerwin really helped to summarize and synthesize a large body of research and help us understand really kind of the root causes of poverty in an understandable, accessible way. And that really was the kind of the key piece of helping us kind of crystallize the direction that we wanted to go. So, you know, I guess speaking of the root causes of poverty, Kerwin helped us understand that it isn't just about kind of individual and family issues or self-determination. It's really about larger macro policy, socioeconomic issues. And so that kind of pointed us in the direction that, you know, we can't continue to focus simply on funding direct services to people. That was obviously a key part of it. But there's some other aspects of the work that we needed to kind of mold our work around. So in terms of the early days, I would say a lot of it kind of was shaped by some of that thinking and the learning that we got from Kerwin through the research.
Yeah, so that partnership with Kerwin was really crucial in understanding, as you've said. And one of the things that we've talked about is the fact that even though we've emerged from the Great Recession and unemployment is down, we still see that poverty has almost stayed at the same levels. And I think that is something that has been very concerning and something that has, you know, is behind that board decision to really focus on reducing poverty. Can you talk a little bit about that in terms of those root causes and how we got that research from Kerwin and what it meant to us?
Sure. So, you know, just speaking to the data that you had cited, you know, where Columbus has done comparatively well coming out of you know, post-recession years relative to employment. However, you know, poverty statistics are you know, remain stubbornly high at, you know, a little bit north of 400,000 people in our community living, you know, somewhere around 200% of the poverty level. It's about $40,000, I should say, just to kind of put that into perspective for listeners, for a family of three. You know, it certainly has to do with some of the social issues that families deal with, but also I mentioned some of the macro issues, you know, where a lot of jobs still exist in our community, in our region, that are maybe not the most well-paying jobs. So folks are employed, but some folks like to consider them underemployed, so that the wages that they're earning are not necessarily adequate to kind of meet basic needs or sustain family living, to kind of have the nice to do's that, you know, a lot of folks can sort of count on. You know, and there are some, you know, other issues that are kind of rooted in policy, as I said, you know, some unintended consequences of the kind of legislation that's on the books now at a state and federal level. And so we've talked a little bit, and again, some of our learning from the past few years has cited this dynamic referred to as a cliff effect, right, where families who are kind of relying on income-supporting benefits, so access to food, subsidized childcare, subsidized housing, right? So these are things that working families can rely on to kind of make ends meet, where even small changes in wages and earnings, again, these are folks that are working, slight changes in earnings can greatly affect their eligibility for those benefits. So a quarter or a 50% increase per hour, per hourly rate, has a significantly detrimental effect to the benefits for which they're eligible. So all of a sudden, that family that was counting on subsidized childcare for their kids in, you know, in pre-K, all of a sudden, you know, that benefit goes away because of an increase. So these are the kind of things that our new model is sort of designed to be able to address, to allow and position United Way to be able to make a contribution to, in partnership with other folks here in Central Ohio.
That's great, and we'll get to the different approaches here in a second. But I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about. So you talked about 2014 really being a time of learning. So the board had really set the strategic direction. Then the team went back and very thoughtfully looked at what was going on, and then a cross-functional team of folks were pulled together and charged with coming up with new approaches to reducing poverty. Talk a little bit about that formation and kind of that process. You know, people kind of got locked in a room for hours at a time, and a lot of great discussion. I had the privilege of being part of that, so I'm aware of a lot of what went on. But I'd be interested in your take on you know, how that came together and kind of where we went from and to.
Sure, yeah. You know, inside of 2015 is when we really kind of, as you say, buckled down. And that's where, you know, we kind of put into place a kind of a general broad vision for, you know, where we are as an organization and what we currently have as an approach to community impact and how we invest our community's resources to where we want to be. So kind of fairly high level, broad vision, you know, brushstrokes in terms of where we want to go. So it was, I think, one of the smartest decisions that we made was to acknowledge that, you know, we're better when we have a good group of heads around the table. So, you know, at United Way, the term often gets thrown around of cross-functional, right? And that basically means that we have folks from all different parts of the organization who have different views on the work are brought together for this, you know, kind of this task of really designing and kind of engineering this new investment model. So, yeah, as you say, over the spring and summer months of 2015, we headed off site for sometimes hours at a time. We headed over into you know, into neighborhoods, actually. So we went off site and we met a lot of the time in the Near East Side community, and that just happened to be where our meeting locations were. And you know, we were able to kind of get out of the fray a little bit and really kind of get our heads around what it is that we're tasked to do. So we had folks from obviously marketing, as you say, from our finance department, from our resource development, of course, community impact. So we had really all sides of the organization represented to make sure that we weren't seeing the task from a one-sided view. And that's, again, I think that's probably one of the smartest things that we did, because I think it fundamentally shaped what we ended up with and what, you know, we absolutely stand by at this point. And, you know, I guess what I should say, I'm excited that our board has seen the vision and has supported all along.
Yeah. And in addition to that cross-functional team of internal staff members, there was a whole lot of input that came from our partners, the folks who are on the ground, the folks that are providing direct services, but also doing research and the like. Talk a little bit about that process of how we brought people together, how we gathered those opinions, and how that affected the outcome of what would eventually became our new approaches.
Sure. Yeah. So there were a lot of internal heads, you know, around this task, but there were there's a whole lot of external input that we got as well. So from the learning phase on, really, you know, we shared our learning, we put that out there, we made that available to our current partners, both funded partners, and then also community partners. And then really along the way, it was really, it was an intentionally iterative process where we would, you know, design to a certain point, achieve a milestone, and then share it, and then seek feedback. And then, you know, in some cases, keep moving because we got a thumbs up and, you know, we got some nods around the table. But in other cases, we kind of took some lumps and had to redirect a little bit. So I'd be remiss if I didn't share that, you know, we brought some of the work in a developmental stage into rooms with absolutely our board, our volunteer leaders, and very much so external partners, and said, here's where we are. Give us your reactions. Share your candid feedback. And we'll put that thinking back into the design of the models we move forward. So many times, you know, we got head nods around the table and that we were moving in the right direction, but I can think of a few key situations where we headed off course a little bit and we got redirected. And so I think that's an example of the process working the way that we designed it, where folks said, I don't think I like that direction, and I have a strong opinion to share, and so I want to make sure that that's on the record. And so, yeah, we absolutely took that to heart, and I think that element of the process definitely shows in the design too.
Yeah, that's great. And that is very much in keeping with how United Way has operated over decades, right? Working very closely with partners, bringing people together, convening. So we talked about with these new approaches that one of the things that we really saw as a key role for United Way and something that we wanted to enhance and expand is being a catalyst, right, to get people excited about what's going on, to help to provide a framework where our entire community can help reduce poverty. But then we got down into some very specific things that, as you said, the board directed, supported over the past couple of years. And now might be the best time to talk about kind of a little bit of nuts and bolts of the new approaches, because there are really four distinct ways in which we are approaching reducing poverty now, and maybe compare and contrast a little bit with how we did it in the past.
Sure. Well, I'll just start from a kind of before and after, I guess. You know, maybe that might help kind of paint the picture of the, you know, what the nuts and bolts look like. For a long time, you know, United Way has been operating as what we refer to in our system as a community impact organization. And that means that, you know, we play roles beyond that of a funder, right? So that's something that we've always envisioned. Yet a lot of what we also viewed as our core role was directing our community's resources to high-functioning agency programs, organizations that were absolutely aligned with our mission and were very well-suited to implement key strategies that help us address some of the issues that were very much a part of our organizational set of priorities. So as I mentioned earlier in the conversation, education, income, health, and home. And so, you know, a key element of our historical model for investing resources was to direct a significant chunk of our investment dollars to high-functioning programs. And so we did that to the tune of about 90%, right? So 90% of the resources that United Way has to invest in community impact work typically was made available to health and human service delivery. That was very much a big chunk of what we saw our role to be. And so if I contrast that to what we have now in our current investment model, again, drawing absolutely from the learning, from the research and from our own experience, we said direct service delivery is absolutely critical. And yet it's not sufficient to address some of the issues that we believe we need to address as an organization in this new framework of singularly focused on poverty reduction. And so, in our new model, as you said, we have four investment approaches, and health and human service delivery is very much a part of that. So we're still committed to investments in that work. But across the three other integrated approaches, we have an increasing focus on taking a new approach to investing in a function that's really critical in our community, which is actually accompanying folks and connecting them with the resources that and the services and supports that they need. There's a lot of fragmentation in the health and human service system, and in some ways in the past, perhaps maybe even we contributed to that. But this new piece of our model is really focused on assessing need among individuals and families and really accompanying them And you might call this case management, you might call it care coordination, but in a sense, really, it's making sure folks are able to get on a pathway to ensure that they can access the resources that they need, whether that's a community benefit, whether that's a service, whether that's, just additional social support. That's another key piece of it. And that and direct service delivery go hand in hand. And then there's another component, too, which really positions us to help contribute at a policy or a systems level. So I can offer an example because sometimes this can be a little bit ambiguous to folks. But, workforce development and job training is absolutely key. And I think you could see a direct connection between that and helping to move folks out of poverty. And yet, a lot of the programs that are really effective at doing that work with individuals and families don't have the adequate connections to employers in certain workforce sectors that are looking for talent, that are looking for folks that are trained and ready to work. And so this piece of our investment model will allow us to engage in partnerships like the one that we have going right now with the Columbus Chamber, which is creating a data-directed approach to connecting those health and human service providers that are training folks that are filling the pipeline for talent, and connect them to the employers who are looking for that talent. And that's not about service delivery; it's about connecting systems. It's about using data, and it's about using partnerships to really move beyond a gap that we currently have in our community. And then, lastly, one of the singular things that sort of just jumped off the page in the research that Kerwin helped us really internalize was that poverty is pervasive, absolutely, in our community, more so than I think a lot of people know. But it lives in certain areas in concentrated ways, and so there are neighborhoods in Columbus that are disproportionately affected by poverty, and it's historically rooted in a lot of things. And in a lot of sort of policy and structures that have been in place for a long time. But in certain neighborhoods around the central city area, South Columbus, Linden, the near west side, near east side, these are neighborhoods that are historically disproportionately affected by concentrated poverty. Upwards of 35-40% of families living in these neighborhoods are affected by poverty. And so, in a sense, we know where poverty lives. And so in our model, we design the opportunity to work specifically in those neighborhoods and to be able to target additional amounts of investment alongside of other partners that are also doing work there, large institutional investors, the city, the county, hospital systems, colleges and universities that are making significant investments. And we want to leverage those by targeting our dollars as part of this new investment model.
Yeah. You talked about the care coordination part, and that is a brand new thing for United Way. That's something we haven't done before, and it really is, in many ways, a centerpiece of the new approaches. And it's actually a brand new entity. It's a brand new organization called Care Coordination Network. And I'm wondering if you could maybe just take a walk through that. How would that affect, say, an average family or a family that we find in poverty? How is it different than how we might have helped them in the past?
Well, the whole notion of care coordination, or as I said, case management, I think is really underemphasized. And certainly not by folks who understand the value of it. But I think it's just a piece of the work that kind of goes unrecognized, because in many ways, as a system, we haven't adequately resourced it. So I think what we've seen is a lot of organizations that we fund are pulling together resources from a lot of different spaces and trying to incorporate that piece into their programming and into their service delivery. One of the unfortunate results is that it ends up living in silos, and it becomes fragmented because it's a supplemental piece to core program work. And I think what happens is what we're currently seeing is that care coordination and case management and that sort of support navigation to resources happens in silos, and organizations don't have adequate resources to support. And I think what we've seen and what we understand and value is that that's a critical function that we need to adequately invest in and support in this community. And so it's the whole notion of, just as I said earlier, accompanying somebody on their journey to get access to the services and the resources that are going to meet their needs, and not to do that in perpetuity, but just to kind of move them through a period of challenging times and to kind of stabilize and put them on a path toward long-term longer term success and help them thrive. Yeah. So I think that's something that is part of our model that is catalytic. We didn't create that model. We adapted it from communities in Ohio and other states that are using it to a high degree of success. The model itself is called the Pathways Community Hub model. It's got a base of evidence and published research that supports it. So in that respect, we got a really helpful hint from a national philanthropy, the Annie E. Casey Foundation, who has been engaged in some of United Way's work, said, some of what you're doing seems to be aligned with this notion of community-based care coordination. You ought to talk with the folks who are kind of behind this movement. And lo and behold, those folks are up in Mansfield, Ohio. So we took a trip up there and we met with two pediatric physicians that designed the model and have been at it and sort of perfecting it over the course of a decade or more. Interestingly, what we learned is that it's gaining a lot of momentum at a state level. It's rooting itself in other states. So this thing that we kind of got on a tip and that we thankfully followed up on is a really high potential model that's being used in other parts of Ohio, actually in six regions of Ohio, and in at least a half dozen other states. So we've met with folks from Washington State, Oregon, New Mexico, Wisconsin, Michigan. It's an interesting and exciting piece of the work, because while we've incorporated it as a core part of the design of our investment model, it helps to see that there's a lot of momentum behind what's really kind of a movement to adopting the model. So Kermit, let me give you an example that I think might be helpful. So in this model, we are able to work with partners that are providing care coordination services in the community, and say one of those partners engages with a young mom who has a 2-year-old and who is pregnant with her second. And this, I think, strikes a chord because there's a lot of issues that our community is dealing with in terms of healthy birth outcomes, right? So sort of why I'm sharing the example. So in the example, a care coordinator would either be referred or connect with this particular woman, and to start really by kind of asking a few key questions and to kind of start to build an assessment of what sort of is going on with this person. And it's a pretty comprehensive assessment, right? And so through that initial engagement, what the care coordinator learns is that this mom is, in her first trimester of her pregnancy, doesn't necessarily have a regular relationship with a healthcare provider, has some other kind of social needs that are going on, currently unemployed, doesn't have kind of regular food to put on the table in her family, and her child, as I said, I think who's 2 years old, isn't engaged with, quality early learning and care situation. So a couple of things going on with the family. So what the model does is it takes that learning from that assessment and it puts it into really an intentional plan of care to kind of work with that particular client to do a handful of really important things that eventually have an influence on important outcomes that we want to see. So, one thing might be to connect her right away with a healthcare provider and get her in engaged with some really important healthcare services, prenatal and OB services. Might also connect her with services of a food bank and food pantry to make sure that, she has access to that really important nutrition during her pregnancy and, of course, for the child as well. Third, might kind of take a look and see, one, is this kid's immunization record up to date? That might be an issue. And then also make a recommendation or two about connecting her with early learning or developmental services, right, which are also certainly key. What the model does is it encourages and really incentivizes through a new way of payment that care coordinator to stay with that particular client and family over a period of really a number of months, really throughout the entire duration of the pregnancy, to make sure that all the important stuff that happens in the interim, staying connected to the healthcare visits and getting to those prenatal visits and getting that kid enrolled in high quality early care and making sure that, food and nutrition is a big piece of what's taken care of, that over a period of time, those are the things that really are going to influence the important outcome that a lot of folks in our community are focused on, which is, are we getting healthier birth outcomes? And with this model, we think that it incentivizes and aligns the services that particular family needs to get that outcome. And not to mention the fact that from a United Way perspective, not only are we investing in that particular set of services, the care coordination to keep mom and her child connected to the services, but on the other end, we're also investing in those same kind of services. So that, I think, is an example of how we're integrating pieces of our investment model in ways that we haven't really been able to do in the past.
And also helping to find gaps, right? So if we are able to put the mother and the child on different pathways, but there isn't a service there at the end or something, that's something that we can help identify and work in the community to make sure that those services do exist in the future.
Absolutely. So the model has a really exciting and a pretty robust data system that is really shared across all of the care coordination providers that are operating in the network. So in a sense, this is a really good example of how our community is given the opportunity to coordinate more effectively than maybe we have in the past. So we're looking at the same data and we're learning from it. And the system has a lot of really strong analytic capability to be able to say, you know, here's a success that we didn't really achieve with this particular client need. Maybe that doesn't have anything to do with the effectiveness of the care coordinator, but really it has more to do with a gap in the system or that we don't have adequate resources there. You can't refer a family to a place that doesn't exist or that a door that's closed. And again, that's a place where United Way can make a contribution, because if we're seeing the data and we're learning from it, we can apply that learning in terms of how we put our resources out in the community in subsequent years of this model.
It sounds like a great part of that whole integrated model that we talked about earlier, really integrating those services across the community. So we're getting ready to wrap up here, and I just wanted to ask you if you could bring us up to speed. So we talked about, you know, the beginning part of this. We talked about all the work. We talked about the team and all the input that came from all of our external folks. Tell us a little bit more about what's happened over the past few months as this whole process has come to a close.
Sure. I think where we left it was, you know, we're talking about the early days of designing the model in 2015. You know, if I look back to really this time last year, that was really when our board saw the vision that we were putting before them. And so at the end of last year, we brought the concept of this new investment model to them, and they were enthusiastic and they supported it. And so that allowed us to kind of bring specific milestones to them through 2016, which was really, you know, one example was transforming the way that we put dollars out through our people-centered investment process. So we were able to streamline a lot of the time and the resources that we put into that model. It used to be a 13-month process where we would, you know, make a series of really strategic decisions and put dollars out after the end of that process. We took that down to about a 6-month process, and our board supported that. So that's a key piece of what we've done in 2016. We launched Care Coordination Network also in 2016, so we've been at that part of the work for just about 10 months now. You know, that's something that's exciting. So we went from concept to implementation pretty quickly with a couple pieces. Over the summer months in 2016, our board met again, and once again, we brought a key piece of the model to them, and we said, here's our recommendation for a new distribution of how we invest our dollars. So as I said earlier, we used to put 90% of our resources into one particular way of investing, and in July, we came back to them and said, here's a more balanced investment portfolio of how we want to distribute our community's resources. And once again, our board said that makes a lot of sense, and that's a key piece of moving this model forward. And then finally, just last week, here in November 2016, we brought a significant chunk of the model, or I should say really of implementing the model, back to our board. We said, here are a handful of recommendations for investments that we want to move forward in 2017. So we made a little north of $8 million worth of recommendations to our board, and about $2 million additional dollars in recommendations to kind of move forward with additional approaches in the investment model. So 2016 saw implementation of a lot of this model, and so we're out of the gate with it already. So I guess I would say that's kind of where we are. And looking ahead in 2017, our board also just last week approved a couple of key roadmaps, I guess is a way to say it, right? So we didn't commit all of our dollars right away. We didn't put those dollars out into the community. We want to spend time with partners co-investing and making investments and being responsive to opportunities that emerge for us. But we provided a roadmap. We provided a strategic set of guidelines to say, here's exactly how we want to invest in some work that we think we want to do in these other approaches. And again, our board saw the vision and they supported that. So that's kind of where we are, and it's where we're going.
It's exciting times to come here because at the end of this process, right, the board has made the decisions, the team has come together and really focused everything on reducing poverty. And now, with the launch of the Care Coordination Network this year, with the other investments that are going to start to go out into the community in 2017, we're really going to see the full implementation of these new approaches. So it's exciting times at United Way of Central Ohio.
Yeah, we're excited about it. We're looking forward to a lot of important work to come.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this podcast. Dave Scone, thanks so much for being with us today. We're going to sign off, and we want everybody to know that you can get this podcast at our website, which is liveunitedcentralohio.org. You can also go to iTunes, and the name of the podcast is 360. Look it up there. Subscribe to it, please, and please rate it, because that helps other people to find it. You can also find it at SoundCloud. So signing off for Dave Scone, this is Kermit Whitfield with 360. We'll see you next time.